Friends, you have tuned in to Autastic, your comedian's guide to autism. I'm one of the co-hosts. My name is Kirk, and I am a comedian, and this is my co-host, Graham. Tell us about our podcast, Graham. I'm doing it different today.
I'm Graham. I'm a comedian, whatever. I'm FaceTiming Kirk Smith as we do this, and he just vigorously rubbing his eye while he's doing the intro. And I'm a comedian. I am Kirk Smith, and I am a comedian.
It's true.
Kirk, you're tired today, you know?
I'm not even that tired. I'm just maybe allergies. I don't know what's happening. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm doing great. My fifth cup of coffee. I'm pumped up, ready to rock and roll.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Sure, it makes me go to the bathroom a little too much, but it's delicious coffee.
Okay, well, people need to hear that. Have you talked to JJ lately? You talked to him?
I talked to him yesterday. He is back on his sunglasses kick.
Cool.
He has about 10 pairs of sunglasses, well, a few more than that, sunglasses that he rotates through. And I'm going to post it on my Instagram today.
What's your Instagram?
Curious what my Instagram's Kirk Smith Comedy, and he's got the cop sunglasses, the wraparounds that look like Oakley's from the 80s, and he's ready to rock and roll. He's standing there looking tough because he never smiles.
That's so great.
Yeah, he's doing okay. He was a little quiet on the phone. Sometimes he doesn't want to talk. He just stares. Mm-hmm. But there you go. You have it. He's his own little person. By little, I mean 2'10".
Well, Peter had a big week. My little brother Peter had a really big week. It was his.
What's going on with Peter?
It's his birthday. It was his birthday on
maybe
3 days ago. 3 days ago, and my parents had a golf tournament for Live Work Play, his special needs group. So they couldn't. They weren't there on his birthday, and I wasn't there because I live in New York. He's in Ottawa. So my two high school friends, Andrew and Mike, took him out for lunch, and it just makes me so thankful and grateful I could cry. And they, you know, the presents I bought him were at my parents' house, so they swung by my parents' house so he could run in and pick up the presents. My parents were going to be like, don't open the presents on your birthday because we don't want you to open them while you're alone. Because they're at this golf tournament, you know what I mean? And the golf tournament is for his special needs group. I think that they should not have gone on the golf tournament, whatever. But it's just, he was going to be alone and not open presents on his birthday. And because of Mike and Andrew, he went out to lunch with guys he looks up to and reveres. They had beers. They had pizza. He got to open presents in front of them. They paid for everything. It's just, it was too sweet. They saved the day.
That's nice.
Yeah. And then yesterday, Father's Day, my parents, every birthday, it's sort of around Father's Day, my parents have like this big like get together and all the family that's in and around Ottawa, like extended family, aunts, uncles, cousins come, and they make it like a Peter birthday party, and they have like
nice.
They have like cake, and he gets to open presents and feel special. So, you know, he ended up having a good birthday, I think. I obviously called him a couple times. I called him an extra time just to tell him I love him, you know, and make sure he was having a good day. One in the beginning of the day, one at the end of the day, and there was, you know, some good.
Don't bury the lead. Did they go to Montana's like he wanted or not? Tell us the truth.
I went to. They went. The next day they went to Milestones. So he had 3 days.
Milestones.
He ended up having 3 things. He had the birthday lunch with Mike and Andrew. The next day he went to Milestones. And the next day was the birthday party. So he did okay. And, you know, it was good. I just realized I was not in New York. I was in Toronto when that was going on to watch basketball. So I felt kind of guilty about that. But I could have gone up to Ottawa for his birthday. But it's like Toronto winning the championship is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. You know, I don't know. Peter will have another birthday next year. He liked his presents. I got him more Star Wars stuff. He sold his older toys. Because he didn't want more Star Wars toys. He just wanted, because he was running out of room on his shelf. But then he donated his biker mice from Mars. That's right, Biker Mice from Mars, which is like some weird cartoon that no one can remember from like 1999, and that had like one season. And he stopped playing with them, and he donated them. So now he's got more room on the shelf, so he wanted more toys. So now we're back. We got plenty of room. We got I got another cycle of toys, of Star Wars toys, vintage Star Wars toys, because he likes specific vintage Star Wars toys, coming in from eBay. They're already in, and then I got another one. I got at least Christmas. The thing is once he runs out of shelf room, then I have to start finding him new toys, and that's really hard to think of. This is a very easy. He emails me what he wants, and then I get them on eBay. But now he won't know anymore. He'll be like, it'll just be hard to find him a present when that shelf space runs out, because he's just very, I don't know.
Right. I wonder in this interview today, we have an interview, we talk about prevalence of autism. Yeah. I wonder as the prevalence of autism has gone up, if the demand for some of these toys and I guess toys and collectibles is I wonder what the graph is like.
That's hilarious.
The number of people with autism goes up, if the demand for the Luke Skywalkers goes up. I'm serious. I'm not making fun.
Yeah.
I'm
serious. Like, that's so funny.
I wonder if you could track it like that.
There's like a lot of prevalence of autism in New Jersey, and they don't know why. And I just wonder what the prevalence of autism is on eBay. I bet you it's high.
Of the demand, yeah. If they had to check a little box, I wonder what it would be like. Yeah.
I bet you.
Well, speaking of which, we have a special interview this week. You wanna what is it? Give the lead in? You wanna explain it, buddy? Or I can do it if not.
Yeah. Well, no. This is Dr. Walter Zaharodny, I believe.
Oh, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. From Rutgers University. We're privileged to have another very smart, dedicated person being interviewed by roving reporter Jill Escher, who we also privileged to work with another episode with the three dragons of autism, you, me, and Jill.
Three headed dragon, I love it.
Three, yeah. Yeah, so we're just really lucky to have Jill going to, I believe it's INSAR, which was a conference in Montreal, and she did a collection of interviews, and we're sort of slowly releasing them, and this is the third one, I believe, of the ones that she of the interview she did, and
it might be fourth.
Who knows? I drink a lot, but anyway, let's roll.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, roving reporter Jill Escher here, reporting from the INSAR conference in Montreal, Canada, the International Society for Autism Research, and I'm very, very, very fortunate to be sitting across from Dr. Walter Zaharodny. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
And Dr. Zaharodny is somebody who studies something called prevalence. Now, first, before we get into that, can you tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thank you, Jill. I'm a director of the New Jersey Autism Study, which is a population-based autism surveillance system in New Jersey, and associate professor of pediatrics at the Rutgers New Jersey Medical School. I've been doing autism surveillance since about 2001, prevalence investigation since 2001.
So it's been about 18 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long time.
So prevalence means... Well, you tell me in your words, what does prevalence mean?
Prevalence means how many true cases of a disease or disorder are there in reference to the population that you're studying. So when we study children with autism, we know how many children are living in the region we're studying, and we identify how many true cases of autism there are.
So people will know prevalence because they've heard of studies coming out saying,
right,
like, autism, 1 in 68, autism, 1 in 59. What do you consider to be the true prevalence of autism among children now?
Right now, I would say the true prevalence of autism among children is 3%. When we started doing our surveillance studies, it was approximately 1%.
And... that is in children.
Correct.
Now, to my knowledge, there has been very, very little effort to ascertain similar prevalence in adults.
That's right. That is something that's almost entirely missing as far as I know. There's a study or two from the UK, but no U.S. studies yet on autism in adults.
Right. So I'll give an example of what we see in California. You're in New Jersey. I'm based in California. If you look at autism in our developmental disability system by birth year, so we can count actually the number of people in our disability system with autism based on whether they were born in, 1950, 1960, 1970, 1980, et cetera, till today. There are very, very few people in the system born before the early 1980s. There were about 200 cases a year. Then after the 1980s, we saw this sort of inflection point and a kind of an exponential type of increase to where now it's more than 5,000 cases a year. Now, some of that's because of the population growth in California, but obviously not all of it. So what are you seeing in New Jersey? What are the long-term trends that you've seen in New Jersey?
Well, one of the most obvious things is that autism has increased progressively and very significantly, and most importantly, very broadly across all race, ethnicity, and subtypes. We've seen autism increasing among white children, black children, Hispanic children, as well as children with other comorbidities or other developmental problems. So it's clear that autism has gone up across the board in New Jersey. When we started, it was clear that New Jersey had an excellent system for identifying children because we have a robust special education network and a good complement of professionals, so it would be a great place to do surveillance.
Now, some people, first tell us, what are what is the prevalence in New Jersey, and how does it differ between males and females?
Well, according to our most recent published findings, autism prevalence overall was 2.9%, or 1 in 34 children. Boys, predominantly more affected by autism by a ratio of 4 to 1 for boys for every girl with autism. And that ratio of proportion has been consistent across the period.
Yeah, and that's similar to what's found in other studies, even in other countries.
That may be one of the few non-controversial findings about autism that everybody agrees on.
Everything's controversial. Are you kidding? I do want to put in a little editorial parenthetical here, which is there is much evidence for an increase in prevalence of autism. There is no evidence that vaccinations have fueled this increase. And I just want to emphasize that for the listeners of Autastic. There really isn't. That doesn't mean we shouldn't look for other causes. I think we doggedly have to pursue look under every stone, right? What might be increasing these neurodevelopmental disorders. But, vaccination is not among the contenders. So, but moving on, when people talk about New Jersey, they sometimes say, well, New Jersey seems to have an abnormally high rate of autism.
Right.
Because you guys do have good services, number one, so good detection, and number two, you attracted immigration to the state.
Right.
When you did your surveillance, were you able to look at those factors and see if that's what actually drove the increase?
Yeah, indeed. We've been doing that from the beginning. We're able to link our cases to the birth certificate files of New Jersey. And if you can link your case to a birth certificate, that means they were clearly born in this state. In our first surveillance years, 2000 and 2002, that were cycles focusing on children born in 1992-94. We linked all our cases to birth certificates, and we found that we linked to about 85% of all the 85% of all our cases were born in New Jersey. And when we compared that rate of linking to other states doing surveillance in the same way, we found that by far other states had far greater in-migration than New Jersey did. And when we looked again in the most recently completed cycle, we found that indeed that was still the case. We do have almost 80% linked to our birth certificates as late as for the most recent cycle, and other states in the ATOM network, that's the network that does surveillance in the same way, they have far higher rates of in-migration. So definitely in-migration doesn't explain it. That's perhaps the most commonly asked question from the public, including the professional public. Many people, I think, begin with the assumption that we're having high rates because people move to New Jersey. But New Jersey has a very high cost of living, all kinds of tax issues, and it's not so feasible for people to move in and out of New Jersey.
So 3% of children is a phenomenal number. 3% of children having a very considerable amount of neurodevelopmental impairment.
Right, indeed.
That is not insignificant. What are the implications of these findings? Because obviously these children will become adults with autism and who will often need lifespan care. Is that something that, I know obviously this is not something you study per se, but when you're in New Jersey and discussing these findings, how do people respond? What are their concerns for the future?
Once they get over the idea that there's something toxic in New Jersey leading to higher rates of autism, they understand that the burden of autism is so complicated and so significant for children, many complex educational requirements, and the vast majority of children with autism become adolescents with autism and adults with autism, and I would venture to say a large proportion of them will need lots of complex services and supports to have functional, capable capacity as adults.
Yes, so that's really the big elephant in the room of autism, which is, you know, we have this unprecedented population that we really don't have the ability to provide services for over the long term, in my opinion, in my experience.
In my experience, when I talk to educators, teachers, special education professionals, I find very little skepticism for the idea that autism increased and it affects many, many children. In some school districts in our region, the number of children in special ed who have autism is approaching 25 or 30%. So it's a terrific, complex set of responsibilities for these school districts and the parents.
Similarly, in California, the developmental services system, which has been around for decades, it used to be predominantly Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, epilepsy, and what they call idiopathic intellectual disability. But now it's about one-third autism. And there was almost no autism by any label, really, you know, by looking at the qualitative traits. Almost no autism in the system, you know, back to the 70s. In fact, it was so insignificant in the system, they kind of said, oh, well, you know, we'll add autism to our developmental services system, but it's not really going to, you know, make a, you know, a cause a ripple.
Right.
Well, now it's approaching one-third, and given the high rates among children, it will soon be half of our developmental services system.
Right.
Now, that's California. I can't say that's representative, but it sounds like from what you just said that New Jersey is probably seeing a similar trend.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. Even in the ATOM network, that's the CDC-sponsored surveillance system that we belong to, when that was initiated in metropolitan Atlanta, they focused on a panel of disabilities, including CP, vision impairment, hearing impairment, intellectual disability. They didn't even think to include autism at the beginning. They only added autism as a focus condition in 2000.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I can't find a lot of evidence for it being around in these numbers in anything that I've read. And I've read quite a bit about intellectual and developmental disabilities over the years. But I also want to ask about absolute numbers, so population numbers. So in California, we are the most populous state, but we counted about 3,000 cases of autism in our developmental services system in the early 80s, and now we've surpassed 108,000. As of late 2018, early 2019. What are the absolute numbers in New Jersey? Do you have a sense?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't tell
you
that. You're
a prevalence person. You only know heads per 100
yes,
or heads right. per 1,000, right?
Yes, that, I guess I should be able to figure that out, but I don't have that number off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, because regardless of prevalence, regardless of cause, we need to know the absolute numbers so that we can plan services.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And we can debate, you know, cause and is it 1 in 68? Is it 1 in 59? Is it 3%? Is it 2%? We can debate that till the end of time, but we have to know the numbers because somehow we have to provide services and housing, jobs, you know, everything for these people. So
indeed.
Those are important as well. And
right.
I think that those numbers tend to get overlooked, especially at a science conference like this where people are mostly interested in time trends or, you know,
general phenomena or causes or risk factors.
And a lot of fancy statistics.
Yeah.
You need a PhD in statistics to attend a conference like this, I think. It's very complex. So what about other states? I know that you're a New Jerseyan and your focus is there. But I know that the monitoring networks find different prevalences in different states. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, from the beginning, there's been a very wide range of prevalence estimates from the states that do surveillance according to the same method. And sometimes there's a two or threefold variation from states which have low rates to states like New Jersey with high rates. Those are most probably due to incomplete case finding in some states, inability to access all the relevant information. Can't be that autism varies from state to state and it's prevalence or rate. Some states are better at identifying it.
I'm going to disagree. I mean, we don't know that, right? I mean, I'm definitely not blaming like air pollution. I'm definitely not blaming like, you know, the toxic waste dump. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Not that New Jersey has any Superfund sites. That's a joke, by the way. So I'm not like, you know, blaming those things.
Right.
Nuclear testing site, whatever. But I do think that there could be regional effects that may have to do with, trends in certain ethnic groups or trends in certain socioeconomic groups.
Mm.
One thing that I fund when I fund studies is the ancestral effects of smoking. So what are the heritable effects of smoking? Smoking causes mutations, right? Causes mutations in sperm.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause heritable mutations. So if you have a population where there's a lot of smoking historically, you might have a higher rate of pathology mm-hmm. in the next generation. So that's something that we see in animal models, by the way. It's not well studied in humans. It's beginning to be studied in humans. In fact, there's a poster here on that, which I will show you after mm-hmm. we talk. So I do think that there could possibly be regional changes, mm-hmm. Country to country. There's very different ancestral exposure. So I'm interested mm-hmm. in that idea, and I think we should remain open to it, although
right.
absolutely I agree. As of right now, there's nothing to prove that.
Right. Parenthetically, I would say that we're beginning to look at something, differences based on how urban or rural states are. It seems from preliminary looks that states which are highly urbanized have higher rates than rural states or rural regions, and that may be because there are greater risk factors at play in the urban regions or some protective factors at play in the rural areas.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of people blame it on ascertainment, you know, availability of services, and I think that plays a role, but I think that we just have to be open-minded. That's all I ask, about these possible risk factors that we haven't really looked at yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my editorializing for the day. Enough editorializing. I'm supposed to be a roving reporter and not a science nudge. But Dr. Zaharodny, thank you so much for speaking with us on Autastic and talking about autism prevalence. And thanks for the work you do in the monitoring network.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
I thought it was really great. I thought it was really great. I just think it's interesting that they don't know why there is a higher prevalence in New Jersey.
I thought, and a lot of people, and he mentioned this is a common thought with regular people, civilians, and professional people in the business, an autism business, that sounds weird to say, that people would gravitate to where the services are better, but then they did that study where they compare it to birth certificates, mm-hmm. and it's not higher than it is in other places, the people that it's attracting, the numbers. So basically, it's not because of that.
Yeah,
which is a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and also a big deal is how it's gone up like 2% in the past 20 years. So like from 1% to 2%.
Well, that means it's gone up 100%, but yeah.
Or you know what I mean. Yeah. Well, thank you for clarifying. Yeah,
it didn't go up 2%. It went up more than 2%. Yeah.
went up 200%.
Whatever. Okay.
But, right? Because it went from 1% to 3%. That's 200%.
I think it doubled, right? Oh, it went from 1 to 3. Okay, I thought it went 1 to 2.
Yeah,
it went up 200%. You're right.
We should start a math podcast where we just...
Could we call it Two Idiots Guide to Math? I think it could be catchy.
Two, maybe three. We're not sure how many of us there are. Idiots Guide to Math.
A few people's guide to math. Let's not count. Yeah. Counting's hard.
That's semantics. But yeah.
I thought it was interesting. Yeah. I found it very encouraging. I sometimes feel like I'm not a scientist, I find it a little discouraging that I don't personally contribute to any of the research by doing it myself. So I find it encouraging when they interview these people. It's like, yeah, I've been doing this for 18 years. I've been tracking this. So it's like, it's encouraging that there's smart, dedicated people that have given their life to try to figure out this puzzle, you know?
Don't worry. I think it's better for the cause if you don't.
I think it's better for everybody if I'm not in a lab. Yeah.
Yeah. so. Well, you're good in other ways. This is a contribution, and you can help contribute to our contribution audience by donating to patreon.com/autastic, patreon.com/autastic. Give us a donation. You can donate as much or as little as you like per episode. We release about one a week. $4. $4 a week, maybe? That'd
$4 a month would be great, too.
That's true. That would be great, too. Anyway, we love you guys. I'm at Instagram K on Instagram, Mr. Graham K on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You're at Kirk Smith Comedy and all the things. You're
That's also true.
On Facebook. You can like our Autastic Facebook page. You can message us on there. You can message us on anything. If you have any questions, you want to things that we should be talking about, give us a lesson or a message rather. And also like and subscribe on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts. That's right. Give us a good review, guys, if you're new. Thanks very much.
Have a great week, guys. You can do it. Thank you.